I'm really excited because I thought I also had no Irish whiskey and I totally had some Jameson's. I walked by and went, oh,
yeah.
Yep.
Fuck yeah.
Yep.
Cheers.
Cheers. Very excited.
Hello, and welcome back to Fairy Tale Fix, the show where we take modern fairy tales and then we... Nope, it's not, I always say that. The show where we take classic fairy tales
what show
and
is this?
Them for a modern audience. I'm changing the format. You and I now write modern fairy tales and then fix them for a classic audience.
You know, that would be fun. A classic audience. Actually, that does sound kind of fun.
Doesn't that kind of sound fun? Maybe we'll do that as like an alternate, like a special format episode someday.
Oh, we should have done that with Chadwick. That would have been perfect.
That would have been funny. But anyway,
Irish
I'm Abby.
Irish fairy tales.
That's Irish fairy tales. And we are joined today.
Hold on. Before we get started with the intro, this is the crossover of a lifetime. Mm-hmm. We are so excited to have these two very, very special guests here today. We're nerding out. We're so mm-hmm. stoked. Welcome, Katrina and Jeff from The Fairy Tellers.
Yay!
Hi!
Yeah.
We're also super stoked.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, thank you both it's so like, much for me. Yeah, so introduce yourselves and tell us where everybody can find your podcast and all that stuff. I'm sure everyone that listens to us knows exactly who and where you are, but just in case.
We definitely mention you enough, but yeah. speak for yourselves.
Yeah, we deeply appreciate it. So I'm Katrina of the Fairy Tellers podcast, and you can find the Fairy Tellers anywhere where podcasts can be found, including we found out Audible, which I was like, Amazon.
Oh,
get away from me.
I forget Amazon.
I mean, just
Audible.
Kidding. Thank you for broadcasting.
And we have one review on Audible, and it's 5 stars, so I'm a fan.
Oh,
already.
You can leave reviews there? Well, apparently. Then yes, Amazon all the way. Please leave us 5 stars.
Yes.
I deserve it.
Indeed, you do.
I love it. So tell everybody a little bit about your format for the fairy tales, because it's definitely different than ours.
It mm-hmm. is.
It's smart.
Even though I'm like in kind of like a jealous way where I'm like, oh man, to take these and be like, actually, here's how I would like this written. But in our format, what we're doing is we're looking at the cultures that created the fairy tales and the folklores and the folklores. I love that I pluralized that.
Very funny. Delightful. Yeah.
But yeah, we look at, just the cultures behind it. Why these stories resonate with people, why they either were important then or are less important now. And so, we run into some of the same like problematic issues that you guys do when you're like reading a tale and you're like, oh, that's disgusting. That's horrible. Like, why would they do that? And some of our like format is trying to answer like, okay, why were they okay in this culture? Like with this happening or this thing, but then other stuff is like, I don't know why they're into this.
Yeah, it's like one of the big things of our podcast, like whenever there's something that happens in a fairy tale that we don't understand, we're like, there's something that seems really weird and out of place, rather. It's like, there's something that we're not understanding here. Let's learn more about what this could be. And then we go in and, try to find out what that is. And also, I think a big part, probably a majority of our episodes are, like Katrina does a ton of research. She's like, crazy knowledge about this stuff. I just kind of show up and crack jokes, but we retell these different tales, like in our own words, more or less. And so we like add jokes and do stuff and we like put in commentary along the way as well. So it's like, we try to like ride the line of like academic integrity almost, but just a fun, silly, good time.
It makes for really engaging listening. You ride that line really well between mm-hmm. finding the humor in a story, but also giving people a really in-depth background on why a story might be told the way it is. or what lesson it might be trying to teach people based on that culture's like priorities. This isn't one of our standard questions. So this, if you don't have an answer for this, that's fine. But a question came to me while you were discussing the show. Do either of you have an example of something sort of wacky that showed up in a story that you were like, what, where, why is this? And then what the answer was?
I've got one. Well, Katrina thinks of a better one. This one, it's like kind of obvious, but like with Giambattista Basile, he's an Italian, you know, fairy tale chronicler. And so many of the things in his stories are references to like Greek and Roman mythology or like Greek and Roman history. So he'll like make an offhand reference to something or like say like this and this happened just like blah, 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 blah. And you're like, okay, like this is a really weird situation. How is it like something else that happened? You know, and then so there's a lot you can go into. Yeah. Like with every single one of his fairy tales, you can go deep into all the references he's making and like learn stuff. And then there's stuff that's like hard to find just because it's like that obscure of a reference nowadays that it's like hard to find things about it, at least in my experience.
Yeah, no, I think that was actually a perfect example, Jeff, just because like one of the most shocking recent ones was Giambattista Basile. There was this scene at the beginning of like the frame story of this whole setup where there's a princess who can't laugh. And her dad really wants her to be able to laugh. And that's something that it shows up in stories like as like a motif in a lot of different tales where detached from anything else, it seems like a little weird. But if you go back into the past, it's like, okay, no, there are these stories of people who won't laugh. And Giambattista Basile makes kind of like a direct reference, if you know the reference, to a story where Demeter in Greek mythology, she wouldn't laugh. And so in the story, the frame story with Giambattista Basile, this old lady gets insulted and she like lifts up her skirt to quote, show a woodsy scene. and I'm like, so you'd be sitting there reading that story and for whatever, you know, you'd get to that and this old lady is like, how about this? And you as a modern audience, you know, would be like, what?
She's showing her bush?
Why is she doing that?
Like, why is she showing her bush? Like, why is this woman going like full bush? Like, and how is this relevant to the story? How is this like, and then the girl starts like laughing and like it goes from there. And in the story with Demeter, when she like wouldn't laugh, there was a goddess, Baobo, the goddess of like rude and inappropriate humor, which...
Amazing.
Icon. Yeah. Absolute icon. Love
new
this
favorite
woman.
In the whole I love Greek the pantheon.
Oh. I'm like,
there's a whole goddess for that.
Yeah. I didn't even know there was a goddess for that. Amazing.
Oh my gosh. I'm like, I
just
want
like there's an
more
app for that these days. There's a goddess for that.
Back there was in a goddess days. For that.
There's a goddess for that. No. And I'm like, hey, we should bring back like not cults now, how we view cults. But we should bring back like goddess cults of ancient Greek times for Baobo, because I'm like, yes, goddess of rude humor. I'm starting a cult for her. We absolutely.
Restart her worship.
Yes, absolutely.
Amen. Amen.
But yeah, like that's one of those things where it's like you'd be reading a story and be like, what is this? Like, these people are just nuts. This is crazy. But it's like, actually, this is a callback reference to like ancient Greek stories.
That's awesome.
Another example that's super short and thematically appropriate to today's episode of your podcast is like in Celtic fairy tales, like we were reading one and there's suddenly a talking fish in the bottom of a well. And of course this talking fish is in the bottom of this well, like spouting prophecies or whatever. And it's like, that's a really weird thing to come up. And it turns out, and they're not like making a deal about it. Because in some things, like where it's something that's like, unusual, be like, oh, this was this thing and it had this ability to do this thing. It's like, no, this fish just is there. And it's because when you go look at it further, it's like, that is a thing. It's not like this one story that has this talking fish. This talking fish thing appears all over the place, which was one of my favorite of those that has occurred. Now they've learned about those. I'm looking for, you know, talking trout at the bottom of every well that I approach.
Absolutely.
And yes.
So will I
love a talking fish. Can't stand talking plants. Or flowers, especially.
Yes. Singing plants in particular are horrifying and terrible.
Like, no, stop.
The illest omen.
I'm like, is this Alice in Wonderland lore too?
Yeah. Gave me nightmares as a kid. The flowers, they attack her. It was very scary.
No, and I'm like, Mean Girl style. Like, like, why are we this way?
Or even like the flowers in The Snow Queen. Is it The Snow Queen? Hans Christian Andersen.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, we're all let's spend
a really
the Snow
long
Queen.
Time. Yeah. Yeah, let's listen to our really depressing story real quick.
Yeah. Creepy, ominous stories.
Yes. They're just like, oh, to be a youth swinging on a tree until trampled upon by the feet of falling children. I'm like, what?
Are we okay?
Fuck, Hans.
Hans, are you okay?
Yeah, the answer is no.
Always no.
Absolutely
no.
Not.
No. He was not. He was not okay.
I still want that miniseries, though. I think the Snow Queen would make. We just did the Snow Queen, and I just rereading it for after a while. That would make such a good miniseries.
Oh, yeah. Hey,
did it like true to the story, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. I think my first exposure to that story was in like a Hallmark 2 or 3 part like movie series thing. And I like rewatched it because I watched it when I was like 12. And so I rewatched it like as an adult to see what it was like. And I was like, oh, this is really weird. But what I liked about it was that they kept the kind of like sexual overtones of like the robber girl. In that story, I love the robber girl because man, that like
we all do
that by sexual far the best tension. Character. She's
that's
like
the Emmy winner when the miniseries comes out. Whoever plays that role, that's who's getting the Emmy nomination like, at least.
Yeah, Emmy noms. Yep,
she is like the most fun, most fascinating character. That would be the character that like when you're in high school, you would want to play Gerda, right? Like you'd want to be like, I want to be Gerda because like she's the lead girl. But then like looking back on it, you're like, no, the best part in that whole thing would be like that little robber girl.
Hell
little
yeah.
Robber girl.
Kill you myself.
Yeah. Like, hey, come snuggle with attention. Me. Oh, yeah. When it's just like, she's like, oh, you should come sleep with me. And I'm just going to like hold this knife like up against you while we like snuggle. Oh, I'm like
a classic trope.
Yeah. Snuggling at knife point is a very specific kink that it's hard to find, you know, your match in that one. Like the one that likes to hold the knife and the one that likes it to be held. It's a challenge.
Well, and it's such a thing too with like YA romance as well of like that sort of enemies to lovers, like youthful romance where like we're holding a dagger to someone else's throat is such like a, you know, sexual moment.
Yeah. And it's like, it's stories. That borderline too between like innocence and sexual awakening where she's like, oh, you're going to be my new best friend. We're going to play together. Let's play together. Let's climb into bed together. And it's like, oh, we're exploring this like teenage prepubescent, like coming into yourself, exploring like your own body, your own sexuality, like type of thing. And I'm like, Hans? remember when you wanted the main message of this to be like science versus like faith and belief, and he's like but also some of us have some repressed sexual desires that we would like to-
there every it's all about sexual awakening in Hans Christian Andersen's story.
Yeah.
It's pretty much every single story.
It absolutely is. Man.
So, speaking of like discovering these fairy tales, the question we always ask.
Oh, way to bring it back on the rails, Kelsey. Good job.
I know. I feel like that was good, right?
The queen of Segway.
We have to ask, what was your favorite childhood fairy tale? And also, of course, how would you fix it? That just keep that in the back of your brain.
So, what's crazy is I was not that into fairy tales just because I felt like all the ones that I was like running into, they seemed really like bland and boring. Like just because that, like the predictable, you know, kind of like the Disney ones. Cause it was, yeah, just those were what Disney had created when I was like a kid. And it was just like, kind of like boring. But what I was really into were cryptids.
Yes.
And
nice.
Like the Loch Ness Monster and like that's and ghosts. I loved ghosts. Me and the show Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, hell like, yeah.
Completely inseparable. And so it was like, oh, of like folklore, I think my favorite was always like the woman in white standing on like the side of the road. Mm-hmm. I always thought driving through like the swamp that like I was going to see this woman. And so if I could fix anything, it would be that I would find a woman in white and be scared crapless.
Yeah. I was like, those stories never end well, Katrina. You definitely do not want to find a woman in white on the side of the road.
You want that?
Like, and then she went to the person's house, or like the driver like went to the person's house to like return something they'd left in the cab. And then they found out she'd been dead for 50 years. What? And then the story would end. And he was also dead. And
I love it.
They were dead.
Definitely. That reminds me more of like the classic fairy tales. When did you, do you remember when you found out that fairy tales weren't actually like Disney style?
I think stories. I think the first time it was The Little Mermaid. Oh, and my mom was reading The Little Mermaid to me. And I was like, this doesn't sound right. And then I'd be like, oh, this does sound familiar. This does sound right. And then she like leaps into the sea and like turns into like foam. And I was like, wait.
Yeah.
What in the world? Like, why is this so different? And my mom was just like, oh, yeah, well, there's just like different versions. And this is this one. And I was like, that one was a really messed up version. Like not realizing that it was like the version.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. What about you, Jeff? What's your favorite childhood fairy tale?
I was getting ready to pass on this question because I was like, like Katrina, wasn't really that interested. Most of my exposure was through Disney. But then I remembered actually that there was, like, I found this book that had belonged to my grandfather that was The Arabian Nights Entertainments, which is like a collection of stories from 1001 Nights that I had found.
Yeah.
And I was interested in it primarily as a kid because the book was like super old. It was from like 1912. So it looked really cool. Wow. And it just like looked old. I was like, wow, this is awesome. And that's what got me into like reading it. Yeah. And so, I started reading the stories in that and like they were just wild. And I kind of knew, like I was looking through, I was like, oh, Aladdin. For whatever reason, I kind of knew that like, you know, Aladdin, Alibaba, there were like these connections to this thing called The 1001 Nights, but I didn't know any of the frame story. I didn't know anything like that. So I just loved reading these stories. And I think part of it was like knowing these stories that other people didn't really know about. So I could like, I mean, it wasn't like I wanted to tell, hey, here's this cool story that I know that you don't know. But like, you know, being exposed to something that I had not been before, that other people hadn't heard of before, and being able to like share that and like kind of retell it to other people. There's this one about like a thief like breaking in places, and he's constantly like, I think he's like, he thinks he's killing someone because he keeps like accidentally like knocking over this corpse, like, and knocking it down the stairs. And like, he thinks that he's like this murderer, but really like someone else is this whole, like, it's like, you know, an episode of Fawlty Towers, like this, you know, French farce, but set in, you know, medieval Arabia.
Yeah,
well, so that would probably be it.
A plus reference for me bringing in Fawlty Towers, Jeff. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Sorry, that painted such a picture for me of like, it's farcical, funny, really, and just generally really fucked up.
Yeah.
No, because I'm like, that story is a lot like Fawlty Towers, because it is like they keep passing on this like dead body. And then the next person who finds it in a way where they thought that they had just killed a person. And then they were like, oh, no, I've got to hide this body. And then they move the body to a different place. And then another person thinks that they, and then the person who originally had first thought that they'd killed the person finds the dead person again and thinks that the dead person is like somehow following them. Like, like somehow the gods are like forcing this like corpse on them. And so it's just like, it's funny in a way that, you know, normally dead body getting chucked around town isn't funny. Yeah.
And it's funny with that, like, you know, that humor of like people thinking that they've killed someone that they didn't kill. And then also there's
you know, that humor.
Yeah. Well, and then freaking out and deciding to not do the right thing, which is like report the body or like find out any more about it. They're just like, how do I escape?
Right.
Association with this.
And then in the end, there's that element too of like, there is a somewhat satisfying ending in the fact that the person that actually did murder someone gets like, you know, the crap scared out of them. I don't remember actually how exactly it ends, except for the fact that, they think that the dead body is like somehow following them around and they're like creeped out. It's like, oh my gosh, like Telltale Heart style, like feeling the guilt, like following them around in this body they killed. So it's really, really fun and silly and like interesting and different, but also it still kind of has like a cool, interesting, like, message or, you know, something it's trying to say with it, I guess.
Yeah. And what's funny, Jeff had kind of like forgotten about that story until we were making a bonus episode for our Patreon, and the tale type is like corpse killed five times. And I was telling a story from England and then another story from Japan that does the same thing. And Jeff was like, oh my gosh, I'm remembering my childhood. And it's like, I'm sorry, what, Jeff?
Excuse me?
That time when I accidentally found a body that I thought I had murdered.
Weekend at Bernie's somebody.
Oh my gosh, amazing. I love that that's a like fairy tale type.
Of course. I love that that comes up a lot enough. That comes up enough to be a tale type.
Yeah. I like that it resonated like across cultures where like different cultures were like, this story feels right to me. This needs to be retold.
This can happen to anyone. Literally anyone. So and it has.
Funny.
How come we haven't come across that yet? We need to find one.
I don't know. Well, I mean, clearly we need to read more from the 1001 Nights.
Yes, yeah. That's very true.
Yeah, and there's a ton of stories in there. There's all sorts of weird stuff and like great stuff. Like that's one of the things I loved about 1001 Nights too. And even the Arabian Nights and Tales, which like core, well, new, not core memory, but I don't know. I had not known because I remember distinctly that the book's title was Arabian Nights Entertainments. And everywhere we've been doing on this podcast talking about like, oh, it's called the 1001 Nights someplace. Some places they call it Arabian Nights. And I never saw like Arabian Nights Entertainment. So I was like, why is my copy of this so different? And like, it was also because it's just a selection of the stories. It had some of the more obscure ones as far as I can remember, except it did have like Aladdin and Alibaba and whatever. And it wasn't until super recently that we were doing an episode talking about Andrew Lang, who is and him and his wife, I can't remember her name, Lenora?
Lenora.
Yeah,
Lenora.
Like who put together this, you know, the rainbow colored different fairy tale books. They were the ones that put together that collection of the Arabian Nights Entertainments. It's by, you know, Andrew and Lenora Lang. So it was like, I don't even think that episode has come out yet. But I had that discovery. It's like, oh my gosh, finally. I've been talking about this on our podcast for years about like this mystery behind why is mine called that? And then we just we discovered it.
And it's crazy because like his copy, like he had said, is like super old. And it's from like 1912, like when it was published. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Cause like one thing that I try never to have in my possession are old books or original copies.
Oh my gosh.
I trash books. Like you should see mark them up. I rip them up. Like I
should not grab one off the shelf right now and show them.
No, it's like.
Like she writes in it, which is fine. She dog ears it. She like glues other pieces of paper into it so that she can write her insane rantings on the margins that there's not enough room for.
Yeah, I like that. You're getting so much use out of it. It's not like a collector's item. It's like something you're actually using. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless the book is like an antique, if it's like your book that you bought with your money, you can do whatever you want to that bad boy. Like.
Yeah.
Because to me,
I'm like, I need to work out through therapy that like I can't do that. I support it. I think it's great, and I wish Katrina all the best. And I'm glad that she can do it. But it's like, even if I wanted to, like, I just really can't.
I would never do that to like a book that was old, a collector's copy, anything. Which is why, to me, owning it is useless because I don't want to own a book just to look at it or like just to see it on a shelf being old. Like, it's not the object. Look at
what's in it and how you can interact with it.
Yeah. That's important and how I can
amazing.
Mark it up and write my own notes in it.
And some of her notes are hilarious. Like her notes are like episodes of our podcast where it's like, here's a thing where she'll like, oh, I remember reading this in this other thing. I need to go and like look that in some more. And then there's like where she's making like dick jokes or whatever as well, like of her own that like goes along with what is being said in the story. So it's like, you know, our podcast, but on paper.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A little insight into her brain.
That's where I argue like in the margins of books where
it tells the author why they're wrong.
Wrong.
Do either of you have a fix for the fairy tales that you just mentioned? Or alternatively, if you don't, what inspired, you know, starting a fairy tale themed podcast? I find that like that question is especially interesting considering both of you said you weren't really sure that you had a strong childhood connection with fairy tales in general. So like what changed as you became adults? Why are you so interested now in mythology and folklore?
So in answer to the first question of fixing like the Little Mermaid, I'm like, there there is not a way to fix The Little Mermaid in a way that is satisfying to me, where it does keep the author's like original message of, because he was writing very much about Christianity. And
it's like a different case because it's not like folklore. It's like
true.
Literary fairy tale. So it was like one person's vision and the very specific thing this one individual trying to say, but you could still fix it. That's the podcast that we're on.
We did.
I'm like, for
whatever you want, really.
Yeah. No, because I'm like, for me to fix it, it would have to be like this woman basically realizes that she does not need man to, I mean, I'm like, we could get rid of like the soul thing too, where it's like, she does not need a man to realize like her full potential as like an entity, whether it is a mermaid half entity fish. Or like a human. Yeah. Half fish, half woman. Like she can go and live a full life without the burden of this man.
Yep.
I don't have one for my tale specifically because as you heard when I was semi-retelling it, I don't remember all the specifics necessarily. I have a pet peeve that I've discovered on our podcast that I would like to fix across like all tales. And that is like giving our characters, especially like female characters, names right at the beginning.
Yes.
Like there's this thing that happens all the time where they'll be talking about, and it's like it happens with men and women, but more common with the female characters, that they'll just refer to them as like the princess or whatever. And then all of a sudden it's a fairy tale. So there's another princess that comes in there and they're like, oh crap, we can't just call her the princess. Oh, now we're going to give her a name. Her name is this, you know, thing now. It's like, just give us that in page one, you know, just add a sentence in after you can start it vague. Once there was a princess who lived in a castle, period, her name was boom. Yep. And then move on. Like that's all I want. But it so rarely happens.
Jeff's like fairy tale fix is he's like, what I want. Second line, her name is. That's a great fix.
The connection to my my tale and collection of tales is that is one thing that the 1001 Nights does really well is naming the characters from the beginning, which I love.
Sometimes the names are longer than my mouth and brain can deal with all at once, and so it takes a minute for me to
get
it all.
But they are there for you to stumble over.
Yes, indeed. And you got to appreciate that.
And we
but do. To the second question, the thing that made me want to start fairy tale podcast, besides being a like stay at home mom at the time that was like bored and like trying to like keep my brain awake and like alive is like, I find culture fascinating. I grew up internationally and I was exposed to the idea that people live very differently in different places. Cause like as I was like creating my mental view of like what the world was and like what to expect from like what foods are available, where you go shopping, how people talk to each other, all of that was being shaped like in Thailand. And then I moved to deep South Louisiana and it very different culture. And that was like my first taste of like worldviews being completely different, how people live. It's like I went from a Buddhist country to very like Christian, but also like superstitious Christian voodoo ghosts and demons are, they live among us. Like worldview, which I'm like, in Buddhism, also there are like other entities that like live among you, but that's less kind of like openly talked about than in like Louisiana, where it's like so much of that lore is steeped. I say that, but there are like spirit houses like all over Thailand on like every corner. But so I'm like, oh, you interact with it less. I'm like, except for when you are leaving offerings.
Right. Well, it's interesting. Like you telling that brings up something really interesting. It's like it's less noticeable because you were surrounded in it. And
that's
then you move somewhere that it's like they're doing the same thing or a similar thing, but they're doing it in a different way that you're not familiar with. Where it's like at the time it stands, you're like, whoa, these people are doing something like really strange. But then you look back at it and you can be like, oh, wow. You know what? Like,
that was kind of a similar thing.
Yeah. It's a similar, like people do similar things in similar places. They just do it in different ways. And it's like their culture and which is shaped by their environment and their geography and geology and all sorts of stuff around it. It's like what shaped it into what it is in one place versus what it is in another. Yeah. So it's just like super interesting.
And it was interesting too, because like as it was like growing up, because then it's like I moved back to Thailand. Then every time I came to the US, a lot of people had misunderstandings about like Thai culture or how things are done in other countries and kind of viewed it as like wrong. Mm-hmm, and yeah. I was like, no, no, no. Other people's cultures aren't wrong. They're different yeah. from yours. Like, and like, like putting a value judgment like on that is what's wrong. And so I've always been very interested in trying to share the beauty of cultures with people, like cultures that they might not be familiar with, and then relating it to your own, and then being like, now look at the thing that you do or that you believe. Can you see how that would be weird to someone else?
Yes. I love it. That's so, and that's so important to do, because so many people don't, they just think, oh, that's weird or that's wrong. I hate that. I hate that.
Yeah.
Jeff, I believe you have the first story.
I do.
For us today. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about it.
So what I'll do is I'll say the title of the story and then defer to Katrina for all the interesting information like I do on our podcast. But yeah, the story perfect. I'm going to be telling is called The Doom. And it's about a young man named James Linen. And yeah, some of the stuff I was about to say might be things that you would want to predict. So I will leave it there. But Katrina, you can give us some information about the author, region, history background.
So Speranza Wilde, absolutely love this powerhouse woman, Lady Speranza Wilde. A lot of the time people are like, oh, yeah, mother of Oscar Wilde. Mm-hmm. And Jeff.
I know. I think I only learned that. Things. I only learned that, what was it, last year when we did Irish Fairy Tale Month?
Yeah, because I did a story from Lady Wilde last March.
And what's funny, when I was looking through, because I was like going through ancient legends, mystic charms and superstitions of Ireland is like the title of the book. One of the stories that I came across where I was like, oh, this is a good one. This will be. And I was like, no, I can remember the commentary that you guys were making as you were telling it, like reading it. And I was like, oh, nope, they've definitely done this one. Like, this definitely happened. She was a person that was like, I'm going to record like Irish folk legends and superstitions. And I'm so glad that she did. She is one of those kind of like lesser recognized names, mostly because like when she was recording it, she happened to be, unfortunately, a woman.
Well, that'll really hold you back every time.
Yeah. It'll be your downfall.
Shouldn't be one of those.
Yeah. Because what were you thinking? Yeah, it's like that. Like they look at a book and they're like, "Oh, a woman wrote this." Okay, then disregard. Mm-hmm. Let's start from scratch collecting stuff. And it's like, dude, she left this like beautiful collection there. But yeah, I picked this story that Jeff is gonna retell, so I don't have any predictions because I know what's gonna happen.
Because you already know. Okay,
so I do just have rewrite ideas.
Okay. Kelsey, do you want to make predictions first?
Yes. Okay. And this is The Doom, correct?
The Doom.
The Doom. Okay.
I'm so excited. I'm so intrigued by that title.
But The Doom only appears in the first paragraph, and then you never see him again. And I'm being very misleading with what The Doom is.
That's a solid prediction.
It is. Yeah.
But I'm comfortable saying that because that's not true, so don't use that as your prediction. Okay.
Well, I feel like it's my first prediction of Irish Fairy Tale Month, so I have to go with somebody's going to make a snide remark about a landlord. Yeah.
All right.
And if that doesn't happen, I'm going to be very disappointed.
They did not like landlords.
Yeah. It's just something like that. Second prediction with The Doom, I immediately thought banshees. So,
ooh, okay.
I'm going to predict that there's a banshee. And my third prediction is that there's a scary horse.
We love a scary horse.
We love a scary horse.
Love a scary horse.
God, those are so solid.
Thank you. I was probably thinking about them because I'm so excited for Irish Fairy Tale Month. It's my favorite.
Like landlord, banshee, scary horse.
Scary horse. My predictions? The protagonist is the village drunk, which I always feel is a solid one.
Yep.
Very often that is the case where the protagonist is like the village fuckboy.
These stories are being retold. Who's the person telling this like out of pocket tale of something in your town?
Mm-hmm. Probably the town
drunk is there saying some crazy stuff that people are spreading around.
Or it's some old lady trying to be like, do you know who you don't want to be? It's either, do you know who you don't want to be?
Jim from
like,
County Cork.
Yeah. I love how specific the names are like in this book.
Yes.
Speranza Wilde was like recording them. And because they have like specific names of people, or some of them even have specific dates where they were like in 1670. And I'm like, how can you say so confidently that it was 1670?
Mm-hmm. But because whatever, it adds flavor to the story.
It adds flavor. It adds this like very like solid sense of realism that I'm like, love it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the protagonist is the town party boy, town drunk, town, you know that guy. That's my
we do.
That's prediction number one. Second prediction, the devil is involved somehow. Mm. And my third prediction is my third prediction is there is no mention of landlords whatsoever.
No, wow. That's a bold choice.
I know that's a spicy choice for an Irish fairy tale, but
yeah.
Okay.
All right.
So they're almost always about how the landlord is a bad man.
Yeah.
I'm all so right, excited Jeff, for the post story discussion now.
Okay. Let's do
all
it.
All right. The Doom. There was a young man of Innismore named James Lynan. Name in the first sentence, mm-hmm. the first clause of the first sentence.
Because he's a man.
and it was collected by a woman.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And he was noted throughout all the island for his beauty and strength. Mm-hmm. Never a one could beat him at hunting or wrestling. And he was besides the best dancer in the whole town.
Hottie!
But. So he sounded like a real Gaston for a minute.
He did.
And then the dancer was like, no one dances, I guess not. I can't remember. Is Gaston a good dancer or not? Everyone was singing and dancing around him, for sure.
I don't think he did much dancing, no. I think everybody else did the dancing, and he sat on his throne.
And ate eggs.
And ate lots of eggs.
So many eggs.
Yeah, and that's why that lady is freaking out that she can't buy eggs in the opening number, because she's afraid that if she doesn't get there, Gaston's getting all the eggs in the entire
already. He's going to come
that's
scoop them
so
up.
That's so funny.
She's desperate. All right, James Lynan, not Gaston, but he was bold and reckless and ever foremost in all the wild, wicked doings of the young fellows of the place, which is kind of vague.
Yeah.
Kind of vague.
He sounds complicated.
But painting a picture of this character.
Yeah,
one absolutely. Day he happened to be in chapel after one of these mad freaks. The priest announced him by name from the altar. I did not understand. This is one of those things that I had wished we were, like one of these mad freaks doing what? I'm so confused. I guess it was the one of the wicked, wild young fellows.
One of their
parties.
One of their parties.
Yeah.
Drunk.
Getting freaky.
And then going to the chapel for some reason with mad freaks. Regular Saturday night into Sunday morning. That's giving us a clear time of when this must have taken place. So, he gets in the church. The priest denounces him by name from the altar. James Lynan, he said, remember my words. You will come to an ill end. The vengeance of God will fall on you for your wicked life. And by the power that is in me, I denounce you as an evil liver and a limb of Satan and accursed of all good men.
Done!
I love it's like evil liver of Satan. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, a very specific body part of Satan.
Mm-hmm. Well, so evil liver and a limb of Satan. So I was thinking like evil liver, not like the liver that's in your body, but like it one who lives an evil life. That's how I interpreted it.
Ah, that makes more sense. An evil liver.
I'm going to start calling people an evil
kidney. You are an evil liver. How dare you filter the toxins out of people's bodies?
You are the gallbladder of Satan.
I'm going to start calling people like limb of Satan if I'm upset with them.
Limb of Satan.
I love limb of Satan.
Limb of Satan. Yes. And so at this, the young man turned pale and fell on his knees before all the people, crying out bitterly, have mercy, I repent, I repent. And he wept like a woman. Which I can only guess means with emotional intelligence, grace, and poise. That's what the author intended.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep, that's what they meant.
That's definitely what they meant. It's like, and then bravely and not holding it all inside.
Yes.
Well, yeah. And the way you said it, very much Zap Brannigan. That might just be a joke for me and Abby, but like a woman.
Like a woman.
So good.
So at James, Lynan's crying. "Go now in peace," said the priest, "and strive to lead a new life, and I'll pray to God to save your soul." So from that day forth, James Lynan changed his ways. He gave up drinking, and never a drop of spirits crossed his lips. And he began to attend to his farm and his business, in place of being at all the mad revels and dances and fairs and wakes.
Mad wakes?
Like, yeah, so mad revels, dances, fairs, and wakes in the island.
I love that. He sounds like a fun dude.
Yeah.
He was
a wake should be a good time.
It should be.
And soon after this, he married a nice girl, a rich farmer's daughter, who I'm realizing in this moment never gets a name.
That's going to be Jeff's fairy tale fix. He's like, let's give her a name.
And this is an Irish fairy tale. That's not fair.
Because usually Irish fairy tales name all the lads and lassies.
Literally everyone, including
the cat. Even
the
side characters, they're like, this guy was watching on the side and his name was...
Tom O'Malley. I was just going to say grandfather was,
the most offensively Irish thing I could think of was what was going to come from my mouth.
O'Malley the alley cat.
That's exactly like my brain did that.
So soon after, he marries a nice girl, a rich farmer's daughter from the mainland, and they had four fine children, and all things prospered with him. But the priest's words never left his mind. And he would suddenly turn pale, and a shivering would come over him when the memory of the curse came upon him. Still, he prospered, and his life was a model of sobriety and order. Mm-hmm. One day, he and his wife and their children were asked to the wedding of a friend about 4 miles off, and James Lynan rode to the place, the family going on their own car. At the wedding, he was the life of the party, as he always was, but never a drop of drink touched his lips. Mm-hmm. When evening came on, the family set out for the return home just as they had set out. The wife and children on the car, James Lynan riding his own horse.
Okay, all right.
An evil horse? Or
is it going to do something
scary?
Please
tell us it's a scary horse.
His own terrifying horse. Just a normal horse. At this point, there's still plenty of time for it to get scary. But when the wife arrived at home, she found her husband's horse standing at the gate riderless and quite still.
Ooh.
I mean, that's
scary.
She was scared, but that was the case.
But that's a scary circumstance.
I wouldn't call that
horse scary. The horse is not scary.
That's true. Like, the riderless state is the scary thing about it. Mm-hmm. They thought that he might have fallen in a faint and went back to search. When he was found in a hollow not 5 perches from his own gate, lying quite insensible and his features distorted frightfully, as if seized while looking on some horrible vision. They carried him in, but he never spoke. A doctor was sent for, who opened a vein, but no blood came. There he lay like a log, speechless as one dead. Amongst the crowd that gathered.
Dead. Yeah, I'm like, he has no blood dead. Coming. He has no blood coming out of him, but they're like,
he's not moving.
It's like he's not moving. And they're like, it's almost like he's dead. I'm like, yeah. Is he? Like, for real?
Almost exactly like that.
That's terrifying.
It's like a dead person. I'm like, it sounds exactly
sounds bang on the money like a dead guy.
So though he lay like a log, speechless as one dead, amongst the crowd that gathered round was an old woman accounted very wise by the people. Mm-hmm. "Send for the fairy doctor," she said. "He is struck." So they sent off a boy on the fastest horse for the ferryman.
Yeah. Get the fairy doctor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He could not come himself.
I did not
himself.
Predict fairy stroke. That's...
I was surprised that no one guessed that fairies would be involved.
Oh, I know. Why didn't we even think about fairies?
I don't know. I guess, like, I just... I don't know. The Those doom. Were not the vibes. The doom. I don't know.
The doom screamed banshee to me, but in hindsight, it should have screamed fairies. That was foolish.
It should have.
It's been too long since we've done an Irish fairy tale, I think.
Yeah, we're out of practice.
The month is just getting started.
It's true.
So the ferryman could not come himself, but he filled a bottle with a potion. Then he said, "Ride for your life. Give him some of this to drink, and sprinkle his face and hands also with it. But take care as you pass the lone bush on the round hill near the hollow, for the fairies are there and will hinder you, if they can, and strive to break the bottle."
Oh my God.
Then the ferryman blew into the mouth and the eyes and the nostrils of the horse and turned him round 3 times on the road and rubbed the dust off his hooves. Does that make the horse scary yet?
Nope. Nope, he blessed the horse.
Yeah, it makes the horse less scary.
Yeah, so that's like points going in the opposite direction.
Like a super, that's like a super good horse now.
Yeah. I get negative points.
Negative points for Kelsey for a subtracting some from your current total.
"Now go," he said to the boy. "Go and never look behind you, no matter what you hear." So the boy went like the wind, having placed the bottle safely in his pocket. And when he came to the lone bush, the horse started and gave such a jump that the bottle nearly fell. But the boy caught it in time and held it safe and rode on. Then he heard a cluttering of feet behind him, as of men in pursuit. But he never turned or looked, for he knew it was the fairies who were after him. And shrill voices cried to him, ride fast, for the spell is cast." Love a good rhyme. Still, he never turned round, but rode on and never let go of his hold of the fairy draught till he stopped at his master's door and handed the potion to the poor, sorrowing wife. And she gave of it to the sick man to drink and sprinkled his face and hands, after which he fell into a deep sleep. How is that different than what he was doing before, lying as a log without speaking?
It's unclear.
Now his eyes are closed.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe. That probably is actually it.
Or maybe his eyes closed and his body relaxed, because it kind of sounds like he was like stiff before. Yeah. Like he might have been like rigor mortis style. Like,
That's interesting. The thing I'm noticing about this in this reading, now that I'm paying more attention to myself than just like skimming through it before coming on the podcast, there's a lot of like little clues that tell us about the stuff. Like they're talking about like, oh, he was like stayed away from all the wild wakes and parties and raves on the island. But they went and he married a girl from the mainland. So it's like, oh, they lived on like a little island. Like they don't say that, but it's just like in the context they do. That's like really interesting. There's a few things that happen like that I noticed. And this is probably one of them. We're having to gather from the context that it's like maybe his eyes were open and out. Now he's in a sleep. It's not like a freaked out state or whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. He's relaxed into slumber.
A deep, restful, healing sleep, we hope. Mm-hmm. But when he woke up, though he knew everyone around him, the power of speech was gone from him, and from that time to his death, which happened soon after, he never uttered word more. So the doom of the priest was fulfilled. Evil was his youth, and evil was his fate, and sorrow and death found him at last, for the doom of the priest is as the word of God. And they did not live happily ever after.
That was so fucked up.
Story.
Oh my gosh. So this story,
I've got fixes for sure.
Oh my God.
Well, oh my God.
That was so fucked up.
The end, it's like this is so weird. And like so much weird happening, which is like this is one of those tales. It's like I'd read it and I'd be like, I am immediately drawn to this story because what the crap was that? But so many stories are about like pagan magic versus Christian magic and like which one can overpower like the other. And like, but this one is so bizarre to me because it's like the priest, but like, yeah, they both like half work. Cause it's like the priest doomed this man and he changed everything about his life. And it didn't fix anything. But then he gets fairy magic, and fairy magic doesn't fix anything. And I'm like, what are we doing? Like, is it the power of the devil or damnation is the hard? I was like, what?
Yeah.
No, I mean, I think that's literally it, because that the point of the story is that you can struggle all you want against mm-hmm. the fate that like the voice of God has decreed for you, and yeah. it won't help. The thing that I really hate about this story is like, because it's not just that, like, it's because sometimes that can be an interesting story, if that struggling against your fate won't change it. Like, sometimes yeah. that can mm-hmm. be really interesting. But the thing I hate about this is that, like, the Christian message here, yeah. not, that's a harp yeah. on Christianity, but the message of the story is yeah. if the priest, if you make some mistakes as a youth,
You're fucked.
You party a little yeah. too hard, if you get into a little trouble, debate, and we can have debates all day long about whether or not that is also morally questionable or not. Mm-hmm. But yeah. that even if you change your whole life around, if you make yeah. amends, if you become a different person, if you atone for your wild and drunken youth and stay on the straight and narrow and are a good guy for the rest of your life, mm-hmm. fuck you.
Yeah.
You're still going to be punished for the mistakes of your youth, no matter what you do. It fixes nothing. Oh. I hate that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Boo, it's kind of like, bad story.
The message goes like counter to what it would seem like it wants you to do, because it's like, oh, it doesn't matter in the end anyway. I'll just drink and party till I die. Yeah. Like, that's what I'll do.
So it's like, The Good Place a little bit, except there's no yeah. hope at the
yeah.
end
yeah.
that becoming a better person means jack shit.
Yeah. This story reminded me of Salem's Lot by Stephen King, just because it's like you have this idea in so many stories where it is like Christianity or whatever like that group's religion is mm-hmm. can overpower all evils that come into the world, that like whatever that set God's power is can like overcome like all evil. But then mm-hmm. in Salem's Lot, it was like, nope, it doesn't matter. Yeah. Like the vampires are coming, they're taking over like everything. Like it's not more powerful, or even like exorcism stories where it's like, oh, no matter how much a priest or whatever tries to like get this demon out, it's like, no, not powerful enough. Except that in this story, it's like the opposite, where mm-hmm. it's like God's wrath is coming for you regardless of whatever fairy magic or even yeah. like whatever
and turn into your pagan magic yeah. won't save you.
Yeah. Like. And like, it's just so bizarre that it's like exactly the opposite of what we're used to, where it's like, nope, mm-hmm. God is the aggressor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it doesn't matter how good you are, God is coming to kill you.
if you weren't pious from the start,
yes.
Yeah,
start to finish, mm-hmm. if you tripped anywhere,
yeah, any mistakes,
yeah.
Sorry, nothing, Jeff, I keep cutting you off.
Nothing will save you from God.
I do a podcast with Katrina. I'm used to being cut off. Just Katrina. It's a just kidding, Katrina. It's how we show our love for each other. We cut each other off all the time.
Yeah.
Well, the thing I was going to say, the offhanded comment, and then I'll segue into the other thing I was going to say, was that like I did like how the fairies were true to their nature. There was like the fairy man that was like, oh yeah, I'll help, but watch mm-hmm. out because these other fairies are probably going to try to mess things up. So it was like this good fairy dude. And then there's like, but watch out because these other fairies, like they just want to smash the bottle because that sounds like good fun to them.
Chaotic neutrals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely chaotic. The other thing I was going to say was like the most charitable interpretation of this story that I can think of. And then also like segueing that into maybe like a real world origin for how a story like this would be told is that mm-hmm. he died in the mm-hmm. end. And I guess it says evil was his fate, but sorrow and death found him at the last. But it doesn't talk at all about like what's beyond, like what is going to happen for mm-hmm. him now once he's mm-hmm. died. Does he changed his ways, which wasn't enough to save his life, but mm-hmm. was it enough when he gets to judgment that he'll move on? There's nothing
to
there. That's open for interpretation.
In
yeah. yeah.
Okay.
So
that's a good point.
With that said, it's like, you know, you make, this story does not have enough evidence that this is what it was really trying to say at all. But I'm just saying the most charitable explanation I can think of is in life, we do stuff, we make mistakes, we do things. And debatable whether what he did is even actually wrong or anything, you know, but it's like, mm-hmm. there are things you do that you make mistakes and they're not the best things and you change your ways, but still sometimes those things will have consequences later down in your life.
Yeah.
Tying into the real world thing that might be an explanation of this, like it is not an uncommon thing for people who are alcoholics in their youth. They quit alcohol still, but they've done irreparable damage to their liver, mm-hmm. their evil mm-hmm. liver. And things happen as a result of the toll that, you know, excessive alcohol has done on the body, where it's like people yeah. who were former alcoholics die of strokes and things like that. And it sounds like yeah. this guy had a stroke. Yeah, so it's like, even though you repent and change your ways, and that is great, sometimes mm-hmm. we will still feel consequences of mistakes that we've made, even though we've changed our ways.
I felt like this was a cautionary tale for priests. Mm-hmm. That's what I would hope, is that this is a cautionary tale for priests too. Where it is saying like, hey, if you are a priest, if you're a person who has like the powers of God, don't be damning people willy-nilly. Like, don't be cursing people. Like,
just because they annoy you.
Yeah, just for this, like, because, like, just because some, like, 20-year-old comes in on Sunday after a mad freak, drunken party, whatever it was on, like, the weekend, don't just be, like, look down at that person and condemn them for this moment right now. Don't mm-hmm. be that kind of a priest that would condemn somebody in that like one moment. Give them grace for their life. But mm-hmm. I don't feel like this story was aimed at priests to be like, hey, priests, like, watch out. You could really ruin someone's life.
I feel like the priest would have been a bigger character in the story if that was the intention. But but Katrina, I do actually kind of love that as a fix for the story. Yeah. I like that as like the two of your interpretations as a blended fix for it. Because Jeff, I also really like that, that is a very generous interpretation, but I also mm-hmm. like it. Like that, that definitely makes sense to me.
And there are fixes that we could apply that would make, if we want to continue on that, if we were like, keep it as true as possible and fix it, mm-hmm. then there are fixes that we could apply, like going on and being like, oh, but he like lived a good, you know, he went on and after judgment and he was like saved or whatever the case may be. You know, there's things that we could do to make it.
Or even like making
what the story would be.
Having the priest be a character that you watch him kind of go through a repentance arc of some kind of realizing like, I was mm-hmm. a foolish young priest that did mm-hmm. a horrible thing to this person by cursing
them.
And then he in some way is able to rectify for that man's afterlife something, but then he himself then has to
learns a lesson.
Be punished in some way.
And I like the idea of the priest is at the guy's bedside as he dies mm-hmm. and realizes what he's done and then maybe like goes back to church and like prays for his soul.
Yeah.
Or something like.
And makes changes for how he interacts with people in the future.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean.
And is like.
Other people's lives for the better instead.
Yeah. And like teaches all the young priests. Oh, and in like the cinematic universe, it's like basically you pull back and you see he's like been narrating like the whole time and he's like teaching the next like priest.
He's like in the seminary teaching the other priests. And that's why you never curse someone in the moment.
I inadvertently cursed a young man to death because he had kind of irritated me.
He showed up hungover to church services.
That kind of pissed me off. And
after I had to listen to him out of my window while writing this sermon, drunkenly riding his horse through the town. That is like a hilarious scene in my mind. He's like just like sitting down trying to like write something, and outside he's hearing like drunk laughter, all this stuff, people like peeing on the side of like the church or whatever. Mm-hmm. And he's and then the next day the guy is just like falling over, half asleep, hungover, and he's like, that's it, cursing this guy,
you will come mm-hmm. to a bad end.
Yeah. And then he's like, uh-oh. This guy becomes the pillar of the whole town and mm-hmm. everybody loves him. He's the most charitable, wonderful person. And then he like realizes like, oh no, I did this to this guy. But no, the story's so messed up.
all messed up. It's aptly named The Doom.
The Doom.
That was Doom. The Doom.
The Doom doesn't appear till the very end. It like teases mm-hmm. you with, the, with yes, the title rather indeed. Than giving it to you in the yeah. beginning and be like, oh yeah, but the Doom that this story is named after, it doesn't appear again. We're done with it now.
I'm surprised it didn't have the words like the, it's a fairy stroke, because I feel like I've read about that a bunch from different, I don't know, books. Yeah. With the Irish folktales in them, because that's kind of, it's like a common thing. Like it I feel is. Like that's,
it was like yeah. a Christian stroke, though, this one. Because the fairies were trying to, like, you know what I mean? The fairies were the only
you know,
were trying
to
true. Cure it.
They blamed the fairies, but then they kind of said, no, this was
yeah.
like from the priest.
Yeah.
I don't think and they ever blamed the fairies, but I think you
well,
know, the
they were like
actually solve it.
Yeah, they're like, oh, like fairy magic will fix this, probably because they thought it had been fairy magic that had done the damage. And then it was like, like, no.
You know, the more we talk about it and the more I think back on the story, the more I think the more like I like your interpretation of it, Jeff, like about because especially of like, you know, he it really does sound like someone who like stroked out, you know, were unconscious for a little bit. And then when they woke up, they never spoke again. Like that's yeah. like yeah. that part of their brain was just wrecked. And
especially
that really
like
hadn't
the rigid, me. The rigid to like huh? relax, like they're sleeping, but then never being able to speak again.
Mm-hmm.
It does. It sounds very much like he had a stroke and bodies do that. Whether you have like a history of like alcoholism or whatever, but it's one of those like questions that every society has to grapple with of like, why do bad things happen to good people?
Yeah. He changed his life. He changed his life around. Why is something bad happening to him now?
And he kind of had a wild youth, but who hasn't, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it's like we, even me and my charitable interpretation, like maybe, and in the structure of the story, like attributing the cause of this stroke to his alcoholism as a youth. It's like, there are plenty of people that live like healthy lives. They eat a vegan diet and they still have strokes when they're, you know, older and they've raised kids and gone through a whole life, you know, those things don't actually necessarily have to be connected, but because he's been a good man, he was the life of the party, but he's able to party without drinking anymore. Why on the way home from this, when he didn't drink, when he didn't do anything wrong, is he being punished?
Why did this happen to him?
The only thing we can think of is, oh, remember that priest cursed him when he was like a drunk young man.
Oh, that's so sad. Oh.
I'm so glad I could bum everybody out with this story.
Yes, thank you. Thank you so much. And you told it beautifully, Jeff. That was
thanks.
Like, yeah. loved
well
it.
Done, Jeff.
No, but I loved the prediction that it's like the protagonist is going to be the town drunk. I was like,
well, because was he?
Because he started out at the beginning.
So
I'm like, they didn't
3 points.
No mention of a landlord.
For the not village drunk, the devil, because the devil was definitely in that story, and no mention of landlords. And I got 0. So
I tried to twist it
vibes.
So that the horse was scary, but you know.
We were like, nope, now the horse is just extra good horse.
maybe you can have a 3-point sweep on her in Katrina's story.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Who knows?
And
usually,
I can maybe make
usually
a prediction.
If I immaculately catch If I immaculately catch the vibes of a story, then I really flame out on whatever the other one was. So,
like, whatever this next one is.
I've used all my brain power predicting the other one. So.
All right. Yeah, Katrina, you're up.
So I have the legend of Ballytotus Castle. And what I want to say about this story before you make your predictions is, as I am reading this out loud, just know that when I was reading it, at no point did I ever know where this story was going.
Those are the best.
It is one of those stories where it seriously was like, never let him guess your next move. I was like, I'm like, where is this going? Like,
I love it. Those are the best stories. All right, Abby, I'm going to make you make predictions first this time.
Okay, great. Prediction 1: this castle gets destroyed and rebuilt a few times.
Ooh.
Prediction 2: there's a ghost.
Ghost.
We're like in Scooby Doo, baby.
And prediction number 3: the fairies are involved.
Ghosts and fairies.
I don't know. I'm going for a twofer. This is what I want. This is what I want to see.
Okay, Jeff, are you making predictions?
I would like to make. Am I allowed to make predictions?
Absolutely. Yes. I'm going to let you go first.
So I'm a novice predictor of these tales, but
that's okay.
I'm going to
say all the time you need.
And I feel like this is a long shot, but it could be what wins me a bunch of points if it happens. I think the story takes place all in one crazy night.
Wow.
Oh,
that's a good
which is
prediction.
Not really from the stories that I am aware of is not the norm. Normally they take place over like a whole man's life.
Absolutely.
But there are those ones.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's the ones that you never know where they're going. Like crazy, a bunch of crazy stuff happens and it's always happening in one night. It's like an episode of 24 or something. happens all in one night. That's a really old reference to a show that I didn't actually even watch. I watched like the first season and didn't be on that. Because I couldn't get past the fact that his daughter got kidnapped by different groups of terrorists. Three
Every
times within 24 hours? Yeah. What? Anyway, okay. Happens in one night. You took the two best. I was going to say ghosts, but... Oh, man. Again,
is there
these
a rule
just,
that we can't make the same predictions?
It's all right. I'll put a twist on it.
Yes.
Okay.
And this is basically me like giving up on trying to win any points, but just what I want in a story. I want it all to take place in one crazy night. I want Doolahan to show up at some point.
Ooh,
probably the end.
Okay.
The man's
Very
soul.
Specific.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I'm not in it to win it, apparently.
That's
and then,
fine.
Think of something super generic, because your first two are pretty specific.
Catholicism.
Catholicism. <Right. laughs>
Period.
Catholicism.
Period.
You're like, something very general.
Catholicism rears its ugly head.
All right. My first prediction is that there's going to be a ton of names.
Oh, fun. That's a good one.
It's like there's either a ton of names or no names.
Yeah, we had one in mind, which I wouldn't even fix that about mine because it was like it was the main character and no one else had a name. If it was like they just gave all the men names, I'd be like, okay, hold on.
Exactly. But, like, you know, it's fine if no one has a name, but if most of the characters are named except the ladies,
we've got a problem.
And no character was like really reoccurring. It was like,
yeah.
Nope. Anyway, so we're moving on to Katrina's story. Sorry. We're done with mine. Spotlight off of me. And now on Kelsey, who's actually making predictions.
So, a ton of names and... Oh, my gosh. I don't really want to predict fairies on this. I want to roll over Scary Horse.
Scary Horse. Love it.
Like, give me a scary
horse. If you guess it
I
enough,
want
it's
a scary
happen.
Horse.
And if Doolahan is in it, there will be a scary horse.
There,
so we both can win.
I know. I kind of want – it's way too specific, but I kind of wanted to predict Pooka. But that's – I feel like it's too specific.
What? I don't even know what that is.
Yeah, I'm like, Jeff, you need to listen to their Pooka episode.
You have a Pooka
episode?
Oh,
it's so much fun.
I will. Not right now, they're but I will.
Just mischievous. Just mischievous little guys.
They're a type of fairy.
And sometimes they turn into a horse. So, you know. That would be scary. And, okay, ton of names, a scary horse, and, oh, is this a, is, can I make this prediction that if I look up this castle, it's, there's an actual place, like, on a map where I can find it?
I think that's, like, the fact that it's about a real place, I think that's a valid prediction.
That's a totally valid prediction.
Because that happened with what the Giant's Steps is one of those stories I read in the past. And it's like an actual place that you can like go to and there's pictures. And I feel like that's the coolest.
Especially because what's her face is like so like specific with like names and places, islands, stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know about this one though.
And I feel like we'd have to research that after
I feel,
story,
yeah, I'm like, I feel,
sure, but
yeah. But it'd be...
Katrina will have to Google it because none of us are going to know how to spell it just based off how she says it.
Ballytotos. You're like, Katrina doesn't know how to pronounce anything and Katrina doesn't know how to spell anything. These are two things
That's
that
a bad mix.
Yeah. Okay. The Legend of Ballytotos Castle. The next tale I shall select is composed in a lighter and more modern spirit. Which I thought was good following.
We like a light and modern spirit.
Yeah, because this podcast has now changed to being about modern stories instead of about classic ones.
Exactly. As I stated at the beginning, it's about modern stories that we change for a classic audience.
Yes. All the usual elements of a fairy tale are to be found in it, but the story is new to the nursery folk. And if well illustrated, I love Speranza Wild's like notes in here. She's like, this one should be like turned into like a book, which I'm like, maybe. And if well illustrated, would make a pleasant and novel addition to the rather worn out legends on which the children of many generations have been hitherto subsisting. So I
eat Cinderella.
Yeah. The fact that she's like, oh, children are being forced to subsist on Grimm's Brothers fairy tales. These poor children.
I love that for her.
Robbed of culture. I'm like, love it. In old times, there lived, where Ballytowtis Castle now stands, a poor man named Totus. It was in the time when manna fell to the earth with the dew of evening, and Totus lived by gathering the manna and thus supporting himself, for he was a poor man and had nothing else. One day, a peddler came by that way with a fair young daughter. "Give us a night's lodging," he said to Totus, "for we are weary," and Totus did so. Next morning, when they were going away, his heart longed for the young girl.
Gross. Of course it did.
I'm like, I wish they'd kind of like told us this guy's like age.
How old is he? And how young is she? What do we mean by young girl? That's a pretty wide range. Mm. That could mean a lot of things.
Yeah. I'm like, please be more specific.
In my mind, it means she's somewhere between 16 and 20, and that's young girl.
I'm like, since they just said for him, like, he was a poor man, I'm like, okay, so he could be young, theoretically.
He could be under 30.
Yeah, so I'm like, I'm hoping he's, like, 25, and she's, like, 20. That would make 20. Me more comfortable.
Uh-huh.
We can
only hope. That's a fresh young girl.
Yes. Fresh. Yes. Still fresh.
Still in the bloom of her youth.
Indeed. Still in her maidenhood.
Yeah, sure.
So his heart longed for the young girl, and he said to the peddler, "Give me your daughter for my wife." "How will you support her?" asked the peddler. "Better than you can," answered Totus, "for she can never want." Which I'm like, okay, rude. Well, I do love that the peddler is like, "How are you going to support my daughter?" And he's like, "How are you supporting her?" like, wow, guys. Then he told him all about the manna, how he went out every morning when it was lying on the ground with the dew and gathered it, as his father and forefathers had done before him, and lived on it all their lives, so that he had never known want nor any of his people. I'm like, Jeff, this is like an allusion to some Judeo-Christian stories, this manna, but I don't know if it counts yet as Catholicism. Mm.
I should have been less specific.
Manna from heaven is very Old Testament.
Old Testament. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I know that there are some like saint stories that include it, but they don't specifically say anything about saints. So not Catholicism.
Okay. Fine.
Then the girl showed she would like to stay with the young man. Oh, good. Consent matters. Okay. And the peddler consented. I like to hear women consent, but okay.
Yeah.
And they were married. Yeah. Totus and the fair young maiden. And the peddler left them and went his way. So years went on, and they were very happy and never wanted. And they had one son, a bright, handsome youth, and as clever as he was comely. But in due time, old Totus died. So, Jeff, again, it didn't happen all in one crazy night. I'm so sorry.
Are you sure?
Because I'm like, now the main character that we were introduced to, dead.
Yeah. Dead. And so far, still the only one with a name.
Yes.
You could get married, meet someone, get married, and then die all in one night. But
have a son.
That takes 9 months.
Sorry, man.
He's sunk.
Not this time. So, in due time, old Totus died, and after her husband was buried, the woman went out to gather the manna, as she had seen him do, when the dew lay on the ground. But she soon grew tired and said to herself, "Why should I do this every day? I'll just gather now enough to do the week, and then I can have rest." So she
work smarter, not harder. I love her.
This irritates me so much. Like when somebody gets punished for being smart. Uh-huh. I'm like, what in the world? They're like, oh, it's greedy. Also, I'm like, is it greedy?
She deserves rest. She bore a child. She looked after these people.
Yeah.
Like,
she's got other things to do. She's a very busy woman and she hasn't got all day.
She's a single mother.
Yeah, she's a single mother. Jeez, come on now. So she gathered up great heaps of it greedily and went her way into the house. But the sin of greediness lay on her evermore.
And she was even planning on interspersing it throughout the week. It wasn't she was planning on eating it all in one day. Yeah. I have issues.
I know. It's like, this wasn't gluttony. She wasn't like, you know what I could do is gather up a whole bunch of this and then all night long.
Like, didn't want to have two deadly sins, just one of greed, but not gluttony, which I don't think it was greedy.
I don't think it was greedy.
It's time management.
It's the same amount they always accrue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I'm like,
if anything, she's working harder. Like, it probably took more energy.
Front loading the work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We're all in agreement. This woman is intelligent. How dare.
But she's about to be punished.
That was her real sin.
Yeah. Bitch.
Okay. So, but the sin of greediness lay on her evermore, and not a bit of manna fell with the dew that evening, nor ever again. And she was poor and faint with hunger, and had to go out and work in the fields to earn the morsels that kept her and her son alive. And she begged pence from the people as they went into chapel, and this paid for her son's schooling. So he went on with his learning, and no one in the country was like him for beauty and knowledge. So now we're moving away from the woman. Now we're moving into the man's story. I'm like, what is going on? Like, at what point? I'm like, what? This is just going to just hopping down the line. Mm-hmm. One day, he heard the people talking of a great lord that lived up in Dublin, who had a daughter so handsome that her like was never seen, and all the fine young gentlemen were dying about her. She would take none of them.
Dying about her.
Dying about her.
They were dying.
They're like, please, you're so hot. Look at me or I'll die. It's like, okay. Calm down. And he came home to his mother and said, I shall go see this great lord's daughter so that I can die about it too. Mm-hmm. Maybe the luck will be mine above all the fine young gentlemen that love her. Go along, poor fool, said the mother. How can the poor stand before the rich? But he persisted. Well, they should write a book about him.
Excellent. They should. And yet he persisted.
And yet he persisted. If I die on the road, he said, I'll try it. All right. He's like, what's the worst that can happen? I'll die.
I'll die.
Yeah.
All wrong.
No biggie.
That is the worst thing that can happen.
Yeah. He was like,
situation, probably.
Yeah. He was like, I was going to die anyway. I might as well.
Yeah. Dying about this. Her or I'm dying on the road.
Yep. One way or another. Wait then, she answered, till Sunday, and whatever I get, I'll give you half of it. So she gave him half of the pence she gathered at the chapel door and bid him go in the name of God. He hadn't gone far when he met a poor man who asked him for a trifle for God's sake. So he gave him something out of mother's money and went on. Mother's money. I don't want to.
But also good fairy tale rules. When somebody asks you for something, very just smart. Do it.
That was one thing that I was thinking about when I picked this was you guys talking about like, hey, got to follow fairy tale rules. If somebody asks for something, you're like, okay, well, just in case.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just in case.
He's not a fool.
What if God was?
Oh, Jesus.
Or a fairy hiding on the bus. I don't know.
There's a goddess for that.
Yeah, there's a goddess for that. Like, watch out. So again, another met him and begged for a trifle to buy food for the sake of God. And he gave him something also and then went on. Give me a trifle for God's sake, cried a voice. And he saw a third poor man before him. I have nothing left, said Totus. So this is Totus Jr. This is the first time we've heard that he has a name and it's the same
Totus
as his
Jr.
Dad. Totus Jr.
Little Totus Jr.
Is it their
little
last
Toadie
name? Or first name? Just their name. They only had one.
Their name. Yeah. They were too poor to afford two names.
A second name. Yeah.
I was like, what happened? I flipped to another page. Okay. So I have nothing left, said Totus, but a few pence. If I give them, I shall have nothing for food and must die of hunger. But come with me, and whatever I can buy for this, I shall share with you. And yeah, which I was like, that's good thinking, where he was like, listen, if I give you this money, now I'm begging for money, and then you have to give me the money back, and then we're just going to go back and forth begging for this one pence.
And because we have to follow the rules of when someone asks us something, we give it to them. It is just going to go on forever.
Yeah, we'll be trapped here for forever
and ever.
So as they were going on to the inn, he told all his story to the beggar man and how he wanted to go to Dublin, but had now no money. So they came to the inn and he called for a loaf and a drink of milk. Cut the loaf, he said to the beggar. You're the oldest. I won't, said the other, for he was ashamed and Totus made him. And so the beggar cut the loaf, but though they ate, it never grew smaller. And though they drank as they liked of the milk, it never grew less. Then Totus rose up to pay, but when the landlady came and looked, But when the landlady came and looked, how is this? She said, you have eaten nothing. I'll not take your money, poor boy. But he made her take some, and they left the place and went on their way together. Now, said the beggar man, you have been three times good to me today, for thrice I have met you, and you gave me help for the sake of God each time. See, now I can help also. And he reached a gold ring to the handsome youth. Wherever you place that ring and wish for it, gold will come, bright gold, so that you can never want while you have it. Then Totus put the ring first in one pocket and then in another until all his pockets were so heavy with gold that he could scarcely walk. But when he turned to thank the friendly beggar man, he had disappeared.
He had disappeared.
Aww. Like God walks among us. No. Because it very much had like those vibes of like...
And there was only one set of footprints on the...
Yeah.
Wow.
But it also, I'm like, I feel like because the man was like, oh, give me money for God's sake. I'm like, okay, so this is related to like Christianity.
Catholicism, which, perhaps.
Maybe. Which is interesting for later. Like, it's a bit of knowledge for later.
That's just Catholicism explaining fairy magic to pagans. Really.
Yeah, where it's like
he was a fairy.
Yeah.
He was a fairy.
Which can still be true, changed. And I can still get my points. He chose to use Catholicism to veil it, if that's
that's true.
I'm arguing that. Anyway.
Just in the retelling. But anyway.
Yeah.
Catholicism that's certainly true. Co-opted this story to change it to something more Christian-like. So I think in that sense, Catholicism is very much present.
Very much a part of the story. So, wondering to himself at all his adventures, he went on until he came at last in sight of the Lord's palace, which was beautiful to see. But he would not enter in until he went and bought fine clothes and made himself as grand as any prince. And then he went boldly up and they invited him in, for they said, surely he is a king's son. And when dinner hour came, the Lord's daughter linked her arm with Totus and smiled on him. And he drank of the rich wine and was mad with love. But at last the wine overcame him and the servants had to carry him to his bed.
I love that for him.
He partied hard.
Partied way too hard. And I bet she is about to do something to him.
Yes.
As punishment.
And in going into his room, he dropped the ring from his finger, but knew it not. Now in the morning, the Lord's daughter came by and cast her eyes upon the door of his chamber. Yeah, she did.
Hey.
And there close by was the ring she had seen him wear. Mama like. She's like, I like my men finally dressed and drunk AF.
Freaking wasted.
She's a type.
There close by it was the ring she had seen him wear. Ah, she said, I'll tease him now with his ring. Which I'm like, that's so relatable. Like girls like in high school like take a guy's like hat and they're like, yep. Ha ha ha, I'm wearing your hat. Are you gonna like fight for it back?
Yep.
Oh I hope so.
Everybody is like, oh, secondhand embarrassment of just like remembering, like, oh gosh.
Yeah.
Yes. What? I've never done
it. It was
that
also ever. Fun. I don't know. I'm not embarrassed. I thought it was a good time. We all had fun.
Yeah. Like, please, I'm going to get the guy that I have a crush on to, like, jump on me to get
interact
his hat back.
Interact with me, touch me a little bit.
Yeah, like, get his Axe body spray on me so that later in the night I can be smelling it.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, man. Was that guy hot or was that just Axe body spray? It's hard to tell sometimes.
I mean, one and the same. One and the same.
Yeah. Ah, she said, I'll tease him now about his ring, and she put it in her box and wished that she were as rich as a king's daughter, that so the king's son might marry her, because she thought that he was like
was the king's that son. He outranks her, so yeah, she's like hoping she'll catch his eye.
Yeah.
Aw.
And like, behold, the
just pages ago had only one penny to his name that he was going to trade back and forth with a beggar to infinity.
I love this for him. He seems
fun. You think
he's
a king's son, though.
He's coming up.
Nice kid.
Yeah.
He's like, Kelsey, he's like the opposite of the Ivan we read about last episode.
Exactly. He's still like, not, what's the opposite of failing up? Well, just.
He's in an upward spiral. He's in an upward spiral.
From doing a good
deed. He's doing amazing.
Yeah. He deserves it.
He does. He's worthy.
He is. Mm-hmm. What I love about this ring is that it just fills up whatever container it's like put in.
Mm-hmm. Hell yeah.
And so it's
the
like
biggest
anytime,
bank vault that you can think. And
yeah. So it's like anytime they hide it in something. So it's like she chucks it inside of a box to hide it. And it's like,
oh,
surprise.
Shit.
Surprise. Okay. So she put it in her box and wished, that she was as rich as a king's daughter. That so the king's son might marry her. And behold, the box filled up with gold so that she could not shut it. And she put it from her into another box. And that filled also. And then she was frightened at the ring.
That's fair.
Yeah.
And she sounds smart.
You're panicking like, well, did I break it? What did I do?
Like, oh no.
Like, where do you put it?
Yeah. Like, and then she's like, oh no, now that box is too full. So I can't keep it like in that one, so now I'll put it. Oh no, now where am I gonna put this?
Fuck.
Yeah. Again, nothing comes for free. So if there's this much gold that's appearing for no reason, what is the payment gonna be if it eventually
comes? What's the
catch? Yeah.
Yeah.
She's so smart.
Yeah, that she's like, oh, I went to like jokingly like take this ring and now things are like escalating. And she's like, oh no, because like, I don't know, maybe there's in her mind she's like, yeah, she's like, am I stealing all of his money? Is that what I'm doing? Now I'm like a thief. This is like escalating. I'm embarrassed.
Oops. Aww.
And she put it at last in her pocket as the safest place. But when Totus awoke and missed the ring, his heart was grieved. Now indeed, he said, my luck is gone. And he inquired of all the servants and then of the Lord's daughter, and she laughed, by which he knew she had it. But no coaxing would get it from her. So when all was useless, he went away and set out again to reach his old home.
Wait, what? Come on, girl. Like, yes. I thought you wanted him to be interested in you.
No, I know that she's like, oh, I don't know. Maybe I have it.
I don't know.
And he's like,
okay.
If you have it, can you give it back? And she's like, I don't know if I have
what?
It.
He
yeah, just maybe you should make me. All. And then instead he's like,
she must not like me.
Well, I guess okay, you're keeping it. Okay.
Yeah. I'm like, all right. Bye. To which point she's like, oh no.
Like, no, wait.
I don't know why she was doing that. I don't understand her thought process behind that decision at all. But.
At no point in this story did I know where the story was going or like why. I was like, what are people doing?
And now the story's going to be about her. No. Or maybe.
Oh.
Another protagonist shift.
Yeah. Oop. So he set out again to reach his old home, and he was very mournful and threw himself down on the ferns near an old fort, waiting till night came on, for he feared to go home in the daylight, lest the people should laugh at him for his folly. And about dusk, three cats came out of the fort.
Why didn't we guess talking cat?
I thought about it, and I was like, that never happens. That never happens when I wanted to.
Damn it for talking cats.
Oh my god.
Ah, What I love, I'm like, he threw himself down on the ferns.
That, he sounds like he has the worst anxiety. Like, he's probably not used to partying that hard. And he's like, what did I do? I lost my ring and the princess hates me. And
I'm just going to really embarrass myself.
Don't look at me.
I'm going to show up at home at night so that nobody knows that I crept back into the town. I'm just going to sit here and cry for a bit.
Aww.
Until three cats came out of the fort talking to each other.
Oh my God.
Love it.
How long our cook is away, said one. What can have happened to him, said another. And as they were grumbling, a fourth cat came up. What delayed you? They all asked angrily. Then he told them his story, how he had met Totus and given him the ring.
These are fairies.
Yeah. So I'm like, was that guy working for God?
No.
He was a fairy disguised as an old man working for God.
He was a fairy disguised as an angel disguised as an old man.
Ooh, yes. I love that. That's fun.
It's one of those things where it's like, did Catholicism take this story for itself and do like Abby was saying and be like, oh, no, we're putting Catholicism on, but it didn't completely overlay?
Exactly. Yeah, they're like, they're going through a chronology like, oh, it's like this fairy. Okay, we'll just make it like it's like an angelic being or something like that. It's doing it for God. And it's like, but it's a talking cat. And like, that doesn't really fit with our theology. What do we do? It's just leave it. Let it go.
Like, just leave it. Just leave it right
the cat,
there.
The cat works for God. It's whatever.
Yes. What if cats were one of us?
No. Oh, God.
Like, what? What if God was a cat on a bus trying to make his way home?
Yeah, because the other three cats are like, if you don't get home in a timely manner, they're gonna
they're gonna be like, "What delayed you?" Like, and he's like, "I gave some guy my ring." So, how he had met Totus and given him the ring, and I just went, he said, to the Lord's palace to see how the young man behaved. And I was leaping over the dinner table when the Lord's knife struck my tail, and three drops of blood fell onto his plate. But he never saw it and swallowed them with his meat.
Ooh.
So now he has three kittens inside him.
What?
What the heck?
What? Pregnant with kittens?
Yes. Immaculate kitten conception.
This might be the best story ever told on this podcast.
At no point did I know where this story was going. So now he has three kittens inside him and is dying of agony and can never be cured until he drinks three draughts of the water of the well of Bally Totus. So when young Totus heard the cats talk, he sprang up and went and told his mother to give him three bottles full of the water of the Totus well, and he would go to the Lord disguised as a doctor and cure him.
Well, are the kittens okay?
Inside you are three kittens.
Who
one
will
win? One is hungry, one is sleepy, one just wants to play.
But they're killing him, literally.
They're literally killing him. And I listen, even when this is resolved, I have questions. We will get to my questions.
So many already.
So many questions. I love the question, are the kittens okay? We'll find out.
They're trapped inside someone else's body. Like, can they breathe in there? Like,
no. And also,
is it like an amniotic fluid situation? Like,
yeah, no. I'm like, by what mechanism will the kittens come out of this man? Is one of my concerns. If they're in his stomach,
Because
he swallowed, because he swallowed them.
Yeah.
But also, are these kittens angels? I don't know. Are they fairies?
They're fair. This is some fairy shit.
Do the kittens,
sure.
Do the kittens work for God?
No. These kittens are fairies. Only fairies would like accidentally impregnate some dude because he swallowed drops of their blood.
No, and I love that he was like
impregnate them with cats, not with like the Holy Spirit or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, I love that the cat was like, "Oh, I went to go check on this guy, and while I was there, like somebody like knifed me, and so I left But also now that guy back there has kittens in him. Oops, my bad.
It's a cross-species M-preg situation.
Classic.
How did no one guess that?
Classic.
Never would have guessed that.
Like, nope. Okay. So, off he went to Dublin. And all the doctors in Ireland were round the Lord, but none of them could tell what ailed him. Because they didn't guess the classic.
They also did not guess.
Like, cross species and preg situation.
Yes, like a cross species impregnation situation. Am I pregnant?
Like M-preg too. It's not even like the usual pregnant gender.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like someone that would most likely not be able to get pregnant just in any case.
In the usual course of things.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just doesn't
that's not on the doctors.
Well.
Have you guys seen like that like song where it's like, "Am I pregante? Is there possibly that I'm pregnant?
Pregnant?
Like based off of like the Yahoo questions?
Yes. Like, I've seen the Yahoo questions memes. Yes,
pregnant.
Pregnant.
Oh my God. Like, or am I okay? He's not. He is not okay. He is pregante.
And he not is, okay.
He is not okay.
Title of the episode. And he is not okay.
And people will be listening to this entire story like, how does this end up there? And they won't know.
And they won't guess and they won't know and it's never okay.
How does it end? I still have
No,
God,
when
yes,
you say
please.
You know I'm like, where you're going.
Not, I'm like, listen, are we even close to, is this going to end? Is anything going to be okay? Yeah. So we continue on. None of them could tell what ailed him and how to cure him. Then Totus came in and said, I will cure him. So they gave him entertainment and lodging. First course of business, of course, entertainment and lodging.
He's got the cure. Like,
yeah, he's like, I've got the cure. And they're like, yes. But first,
you don't want to dump one of those bottles down him first?
Yeah, they're like, no, let's entertain him. Let's make sure he's nice and comfy.
Party first.
Yeah, of course, always. And when he was refreshed, he gave of the well water 3 draughts to his lordship. When out jumped the 3 kittens... And there was great rejoicing, and they treated Totus like a prince. Yeah. They jumped out from where?
From where?
From where?
Definitely his mouth. He just barfed these kittens.
Yeah, I'm like, did they jump out the way that they went in?
Yeah.
Or did they phase through his skin?
Through his body?
Or did they just eviscerate this man on their way out?
Did they come out?
Did they come out his butt?
A butthole? Or a pee hole?
Ooh, a pee hole.
There's been a lot less rejoicing in those situations.
Like, which hole did they come out? I have questions.
Look, first fix is mouth.
Oh.
Put those questions to bed. It's his mouth.
Your first fix is you're like, no, we're going to answer this question just so that no one's upset. I wanted like an alien like versus predator. Is that the one where it's like just like erupts like out of him?
Yeah.
They jump out of, that's what I wanted to imagine. But
again,
I love that your thought was alien versus predator and not the alien franchise.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't alien, like an alien. It's like an alien versus predator. I
haven't you seen the one where there's 2 guys and one
alien
pops out?
I haven't seen any
of
them.
And a predator pops out of the other one, and then these infant alien and infant predator fight each other. You haven't seen that one?
No.
Is that the second one? Is that like Alien versus Predator Requiem? I have not seen that one.
I haven't seen
it. But I do want to. I do love Alien versus Predator. Like Alien versus Predator is probably my favorite horror movie.
Ooh.
And I'm like, I've never seen any of them. All I know is from memes, watching it happen.
Hey, you know, watch Alien versus Predator. I highly recommend it. It's a fantastic film.
Nice. Is that the one where it happens?
No.
No.
That happens in all of them.
Oh, good.
Like, well, the chestburster alien is from the Alien franchise. Sorry, sci-fi yeah. film.
No, this is important for posterity. This is
important stuff. The alien chestburster is from all alien movies, including Alien versus Predator, but also from Alien, Aliens, Alien 3, and Alien Resurrection. Nice. And I assume Alien versus Predator Requiem, which I have not seen.
And to Alien, to Predator.
To Alien, to Predator, yes. The very famous conclusion of the Alien versus Predator franchise.
Indeed. Perfection. But that's how I wanted the kittens to leave his body. But regardless of where in your imagination they kittens. Jumped from, they did indeed jump from this man, three kittens.
And they rejoiced.
Okay. All right.
And there was great rejoicing, and they treated Totus like a prince. But all the same, he could not get the ring from the Lord's daughter.
Still not good enough.
So he set off home again, quite disheartened.
Oh. I tell this girl to cough it up. Like,
yeah. Like, give me my stuff back.
We're not playing anymore.
Yeah.
This isn't cute.
You stole from me. Mm-hmm. Next time your dad gets impregnated with cats, I'm leaving him for dead if you don't give me my ring back.
To be fair, we should have seen it coming with like the rule of threes. They're not going to succeed on the second attempt.
That's, you know,
that's yeah, on us. That's
but also fair. I'm like, why is this woman playing so hard to get? Unless she doesn't want to be got.
Because she's got a ring that can give her endless wealth.
Yeah, she thought it was like a flirty fun joke at first, and now she's like, "Well, I'm rich." So
yeah,
she's like, "Married anymore? The reason to get married is to increase your wealth."
Yeah.
Oh my goodness,
she doesn't have to do that anymore.
Is this an anti-greed message because of the whole greediness at the beginning, and she's going to not be greedy by giving the ring back?
Well,
she got more chances than Totus's mom.
That's true.
Yeah, for real. Like, he's getting more chances than God gave to Totus. I don't know. This episode, we're going real hard against, like, the messages. God will get you. No matter how good you are in life, God will beat you down.
God's going to get you.
Yep.
He will assume the worst about you and never give you a second chance.
I feel like that's just religion.
We're like, oof, it's rough out here. Okay. So, he headed off home again, quite disheartened, and thought to himself, if I could only meet the man again that gave me the ring, who knows what luck I might have. And as he sat down to rest in a wood and saw there not far off three boys fighting under an oak tree. Shame on ye to fight so, he said to them. What is the fight about? Then they told him, our father, they said, before he died, buried under this oak tree a ring by which you can be in any place in 2 minutes if you only wish it. A goblet that is always full when standing and empty only when on its side, and a harp that plays any tune of itself that you can name or wish for. Nice. I want to divide the things, said the youngest boy, and let us all go and seek our fortunes as we can. But I have a right to the whole, said the eldest. And they went on fighting till at
selfish.
Length. I know. But really? Also, man, then it turns into like the question of like, oh, which object is most valuable or who gets to decide for? I'm like, oh, this is like a nice little like brain teaser. But then we're not doing that. That's not what the story is doing. No brain like teasers for you.
Teleporting ring versus a cup that's never empty. You can just drink as much as you want. Clear choice.
I know
there.
Which one I want.
And I think we might be thinking of different. Oh, okay.
And then it's like, oh, and a harp that plays any tune. I'm like, I already have a cell phone, so I'm like,
got a phone.
Yeah.
Hey, but back then, that was
Spotify, dude. Come on.
Yeah,
that's true.
Just like turning to like the phone and be like, or not the phone, turning to the harp and being like, can you play WAP by? That'd be incredible. Weird on a harp.
Yeah.
Are we all imagining it?
Or beautiful?
Yes. Yes. A hauntingly like, beautiful wop.
See it?
Grab a bucket and a mop. Okay. Macaroni in a pot.
A hauntingly beautiful wop is what I am.
A hauntingly beautiful wop.
Another title possibility for this episode.
There are so many.
Oh, God. All right. Continue. We gotta wrap this up at some point. Come on.
You're like, the story has to end.
Keep it going.
I'm so sorry. I picked like the world's.
This is amazing. I keep having stuff to say is the problem.
Yes. Okay. So fighting over this stuff. So they went on fighting till at length Totus said, I'll tell you how to settle the matter. All of you be here tomorrow and I'll think over the matter tonight. And I engage you will have nothing more to quarrel about when you come in the morning. So the boys promised to keep good friends till they met in the morning and went away. When Totus saw them clear off, he dug up the ring, the goblet, and the harp, and now said, I'll be right. And they won't have anything to fight about in the morning.
What a selfless act.
He's like, I'll solve this problem for them.
Uh-huh. Personality change up.
I know. He had been like so kind, selfless, giving up, like helping others. And now he's like, well, free stuff for me. Mm-hmm. Off he set back again to the Lord's castle with the ring, the goblet, and the harp. But he soon bethought himself of the powers of the ring, and in 2 minutes, he was in the Great Hall. He was like, why am I walking?
Why am I walking? I have a teleportation ring.
Yeah, like, what am I doing with my life? So, in 2 minutes, he was in the Great Hall, where all the lords and ladies were just sitting down to dinner, and the harp played the sweetest music, and they all listened in delight, and he drank out of the goblet, which was never empty, and then, when his head began to grow a little light, it is enough, he said, and putting his arm round the waist of the lord's daughter, he took his harp and goblet in the other hand and murmured, I wish we were at the old fort by the side of the wood. In 2 minutes, they were both at the desired spot. He was like, well, that's enough partying. Now kidnap. But okay. His head was heavy with the wine, and he laid down the harp beside him and fell asleep. And when she saw him asleep, she took the ring off his finger.
Yes. Hell yes, girl.
I love this.
I love her.
And the harp and the goblet from the ground and was back home in her father's castle before 2 minutes had passed.
Okay, bye.
She was like, sorry you got so drunk and wasted that you could not carry out your plan efficiently. That seems like a personal problem.
Uh-huh. Seems like a personal problem. Burn on you. And yeah.
She's like, remember when you had everything, but you were too dumb to like carry out the plan?
So good.
When Totus awoke and found his prize gone and all his treasures besides, he was like one mad and roamed about the country till he came by an orchard where he saw a tree covered with bright rosy apples. Being hungry and thirsty, he plucked one and ate it. But no sooner had he done so than horns began to sprout from his forehead and grew larger and longer till he knew
what
he looked like
story?
A goat.
What is this story?
I know. Like, who is telling this bedtime story? So, and grew larger and longer till he knew he looked like a goat, and all he could do, they would not come off. Now, indeed, he was driven out of his mind and thought how all the neighbors would laugh at him. That's his biggest worry. He's like, people are going to laugh at me.
More anxiety.
And as he raged and roared with shame, he spied another tree with apples, still brighter, of ruddy gold. I love that he was like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Oh, look at those apples. Mm. How about them apples?
How about them apples?
If I were to have 50 pairs of horns, I must have one of those, he said, and seized one.
Okay. I mean, you know.
Right. Yeah. He was like, well, I'm already worth ugly. It. I might as well
in
eat
for
some
a penny.
Of these. Yeah. In for worse. A penny. Like, let's go all the way, man. But he no sooner tasted it than the horns fell off and he felt that he was looking stronger and handsomer than ever.
Cool.
Now I have her at last. He exclaimed. In what way? I'll put horns on them all. And will never take them off until they give her to me as my bride before the whole court.
I cannot stress enough how much I am enjoying that this story has turned into a cat and mouse like game between him and the Lord's daughter.
Yeah.
That this is like, very funny quiet. To me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This plan is foolproof.
It's foolproof. I've got her now. And like, she has so far won every single one of their encounters.
Yes. Very easily. Also by him like just being like, oh man,
because
I give
he's
up.
Fucked up usually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is usually him just being like, oh, well, I got too drunk, lost my ring. Got too drunk, lost everything.
Lost everything. I love the I've got her now energy.
Yeah, when it's like, do you?
You go, Glenn Coco.
Like, buddy, okay, maybe. We'll see.
I'm rooting for him.
I'll put horns on them all and will never take them off until they give her to me as my bride before the whole court.
Fuck yeah.
Without further delay, he set off to the Lord's palace, carrying with him as many of the apples as he could bring off the two trees. And when they saw the beauty of the fruit, they longed for it, and he gave them all, so that at last there was not a head to be seen without horns in the whole dining hall. Then they cried out and prayed to have the horns taken off, but Totus said, "No, there they shall be till I have the Lord's daughter given to me for my bride, and my two rings, my goblet, and my harp all restored to me." And this was done before the face of all the lords and ladies, and his treasures were restored to him. And the Lord placed his daughter's hand in the hand of Totus, saying, "Take her, she is your wife. Only free me from the horns." Then Totus brought forth the golden apples, and they all ate, and the horns fell off, and he took his bride and his treasures and carried them off home, where he built the castle of Ballytotus in the place where stood his father's hut, and enclosed the well within the walls. And when he had filled his treasure room with gold, so that no man could count his riches, he buried his fairy treasures deep in the ground, where no man knew, and no man has ever yet been able to find them until this day. The
And that's how end. I'm
Wow. Clean forgot about the castle.
Yes.
Forgot what it's called.
This there was I love that the whole story is like the title is The Legend of Ballytotus Castle. At no point are we gonna, until right at the end they're like
and going to encounter
and there's a castle that got built there. It's like like wow, that was the whole story.
Hey.
I mean, wow.
What was that?
Wow.
I am in full agreement with Lady Wilde that this would be an excellent longer novel or illustrated something. I want the show. I want the cartoon. Yep. I think this would be a very good cartoon.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to see the cartoon of those cats coming out of that man.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I must know how they envision that happening.
Yes.
I want a little more personality and agency on the Lord's daughter, but that's mm-hmm. literally my only fix. I love the rest of it.
Yeah. No, because I'm like, what I want to see is more of like her personality mm-hmm. being like, no, I'm going to screw over this guy.
I want her to be an equal participant in this game. Yeah. So that when he says, "I've got her now," there's more of like, she really was trying to outdo him in some way.
Yeah, that it's like she wanted to outdo him, but she also is okay with like being caught.
She's pleased to be caught, but she wanted to play this game first. Is kind of
she needed to meet her match.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
is he really good enough to be with me?
She's because fun.
Because if she's this like super hot lady, and all these guys want is to like, oh, I really want to marry like this the Lord's daughter because she's super hot, and she's like, no, not interested in that. And she's like, oh, but playing this little cat and mouse game with this like man. Perfect.
Doesn't it love just this. Make you feel alive?
Yes. She's like, oh, this in her mind, it's like this like chess match, but he's just like a bumbling idiot that's like falling up the stairs.
And she thinks that's pretty hot.
Yeah. She's like, I like how messy this guy is.
Does such anyone a mess. Have a casting? Like, who would you cast as these two characters?
Audrey Plaza. Just because, perfect. Like, I can see her, like, watching, like, the kittens popping out of her dad. And she's just, like, got, like, some wine. And she's like, oh.
Yeah.
She can. She's like, that's crazy.
She would, like, make the knot. Play that scene of where he asks her, do you have my ring? Like, and she says, no. I think she would play that scene so well. So I'm like, no.
Yeah. Just like, no.
No. God. Yeah,
she could make the like not actually doing anything to win like seem interesting. It's like she planned it all along. Like she was just being patient. Mm-hmm. Like that. Her plan was to let him ruin himself every step of the way.
I can even imagine her at the point where like she eats the apple and it like she like grows horns, her being like not mad. Like this is also a slay look on me. Not mad.
For him,
it's like someone that can pull off like looking pathetic and like downtrodden because he keeps messing up But then also someone like believable enough that the princess or whatever lord's daughter would be like excited to end up with him.
Yeah. And because I like Parks and Rec, my brain now is like fighting from just saying like Chris Pratt. But I'm Andy Dwyer's like Chris Pratt.
Yeah. I'm thinking more of like a Tom Holland maybe.
Yeah.
That could work.
Where he like looks
someone kind of like waifish who looks like he'd be some poor boy from the country, but like he's like charming and kind of bumbling.
Yeah.
And like the fact that he's dumb is like endearing. You know, it's like, oh, he's like a little dumb, but just because he's young and he doesn't know a lot. And
that's cute. But he's also scrappy. Like he's got like he's got like a scrappy, feisty energy.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah.
That was amazing. That was such a great story.
What a great story.
Thank you. Like, it was like a story where I'm like, at no point do I know what's happening.
Yeah. No, that was dead on. Yeah. So points wise.
Yeah.
Abby got one for the fairies are involved.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't explicitly say, but.
And weren't. Yeah. Because it wasn't like.
The lord got impregnated with kittens. Yeah. I think. The fairies are involved.
Here. It wasn't until the end when they specifically called them fairy treasures where I was like, fairy wine. No. Mm-hmm. That goblet, but no, not the same type of wine. But yeah, it was like fairy treasures. So I'm like, nope, that's fairy stuff.
Definitely. Fey nonsense all the way.
Fey nonsense.
I don't know. I feel like Jeff could get that point for Catholicism because there was a lot of that.
I concede that I don't get a point for that.
No, I mean, I think there is an argument to be made that the first part of the story was co-opted by by trying to have there be a godly reason for this story to be told, as opposed to like witchcraft reasons.
Yeah, So it very much I felt like it was like trying to put Catholicism onto like the story. So
the looming specter of Catholicism does overshadow the story.
Looming specter
in the first half.
That All right, was I will ghost.
Catholicism. They had us in the first half.
Granting him the point.
I got 0 points again. No names, no scary horse. And I did look it up. I tried to find Ballytotus Castle, but I did not. So,
I'm like every castle in our minds now in Ireland. Uh-huh. Can't be that one.
So good. Amazing. What was the fix?
Oh, yes. Our fixes were mostly like, we want to have this lady getting more of a role, more autonomy, like even more of like her character. But it seriously is like, no, I love this for like a mini series of like, how is this guy going to get this woman? Where like each episode is like, he is back being like, oh, what am I going to do? And then finds some ridiculous scenario. And he's like, maybe this magic object will help me. And then he goes, gets the magic item stolen. And then he's like, okay. Well, that didn't work. And the next episode is like a new magic item.
Yes.
Like very Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
But like it's a romantic plot line. I love it.
This lady just like ends with like a whole bunch of like magic rings and like a chest full of like random objects that she's like, buddy, come on.
Another fix. I think we could do is like getting more into like the good part of the story. Like it started off with like, it's the dad and now it's his mom. And now the guy's
mana
born. It's like
punishment.
And it's like, we didn't need to see all that actually. It didn't really play into it at all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like, just have this guy starting out like on the road, you know, he goes to seek
his fortune.
Yeah.
He's poor. Okay. We're done. We got it.
Yeah.
I do also want more of the, you know, the beggar man fairy cat.
Yes.
And what's his deal?
What's with the deal with the cats? Yes, tell us more.
Talking cats. Like,
introduce us to your whole gang of talking cats. What happens to the kittens? At what point?
That's such a good question. Are they fairies? Are they being raised as cats?
Yeah. Are they cat changelings? Where the fairies replace other barnyard cats with fey cats? And the mother cats are like, this isn't my baby. And they're like, you're going crazy. You're an insane, hysterical cat woman.
But to be sure, you have to burn them just in case.
Yes, you have to burn them. The fairy test. That's how we'll know. We're like inventing side cat quests.
10 out of 10 would watch. Well, that was so much fun. Oh my gosh. I think that was definitely one of my favorite episodes we've ever had. Thank you so much.
That's always the goal.
So much for coming on. It's been way too, like, we waited way too long to ask you on the show. So we're so happy to have you here. And remind everyone where they can find you and all that, all your handles and stuff like that.
Yeah. So we are The Fairy Tellers, and you can find us on Instagram at @the_fairy_tellers, where hopefully I'll be posting more content than I have been lately. But yeah, you can listen to us wherever your podcasts can be found.
Amazing. Yeah. Go listen to them.
And thank you so much for having us on. This was awesome.
Yeah, it was a blast.
Yeah, it was really wonderful. Like, both of you are such great storytellers and so, like, such pleasant, charming, wonderful, funny people. And we really appreciate you coming. Like,
as are the two of you.
Oh, thank you. All right. Well, and thank you all so much for listening to Fairy Tale Fix. As always, if you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, leave us a review on Apple or Audible. We discovered
apparently you can leave it on Audible.
Very exciting.
Nice things only. Or actually, you know what? Sometimes when you say mean things, y'all are really funny. So feel free to say something mean too.
Just go with your heart. Be honest, you know. If you want to support the show, you can get extra episodes, merch, books, and other cool bonus content at our Patreon by signing up at fairytalefix.cash. And you can find us on Instagram at fairytalefixpod. And every now and then we post a TikTok. Also at Fairy Tale Fix Pod. And you can also email us your favorite fairy tales, folklore, nursery rhymes, and other such things at info@fairytalefixpod.com.
Where the priest realizes that what he did was wrong in cursing that young man, and he gets a redemption arc and is able to pass on knowledge to others to not be like him and make the same mistake in the future.
Perfect.
We love a repentant priest.
We do.
Yep.
And my story, 100%, I just want more cat info. I want to know everything about these cats, and I want the fae to mess up these people's lives even more. But more importantly, my fix would be having this woman be the most in charge of this man's chaos. And because I just love seeing stories where women get choice, women are in charge. And so I would just love to see this woman play this little cat and mouse game with this guy until she feels good and ready to marry him.
And lets him catch her.
Yes.
Perfect. Adorable. Fixes.
And let her keep her horns, because I think that's a hot look.
Ooh, yeah.
It is a hot look. And they all lived
happily ever after.
The end.